Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Darren Lewis of the Daily Mirror and Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst. It might not have the ring of the Matthews final, 1953 and all that, ask your granddad kids, but this is the Mourinho final between two clubs who carry his imprint. Chelsea, well, being Chelsea, playing politics rather than compelling football. United are playing his way rather than their way. So, Darren, will winning the FA Cup represent a good season for United?
For Mourinho, it will do, because it will enhance his CV, which for him is all important. For the club, I think it papers over the cracks of a disappointing season. Yes, they've finished second in the Premier League, but they've not played the kind of football that you would expect, A, from Manchester United, and B, from a team that has spent so many millions over the past couple of transfer window, and see with all of the stellar talents that he's got at his disposal as well. I have to say I've been disappointed, all told, by Manchester United this season, and I hope the handbrake comes off next season.
But playing devil's advocate, Adrian, finished second, best showing in the league for five seasons.
I think you've got to judge it a little bit from where they came from. And in recent seasons, they've been miles away. OK, points-wise, they were a long way off of Manchester City. But yeah, it's progress, second place. Their performances don't merit second place. They've been very average to watch. But what has impressed me about United this season is they've found ways to win the big games. And last season, it was all about damage limitation in a way. He was playing for a draw, Jose Mourinho. This time around, he's been getting narrow wins. I think he's won 6 of the 10 games against the big six. I think that represents a big step up. I think their game management is actually very good. But I agree with Darren, given the talent that they've got in forward areas, we expect to see a far more entertaining Manchester United. I think the supporters do as well.
Talking of talent, you know, look at Paul Pogba. Now, he's going back to Wembley, which was the scene of his touchline dressing down. Where are we with that relationship? I know there's been a lot of speculation around it. You know, denials on both sides are obviously best bezzies, you know. But what about Pogba? Does he need to grab hold of a showpiece occasion?
I think he does. I'm in two minds about Pogba because, on the one hand, it is true to say when you spend that much money for a footballer, you do expect him to make the kind of impact that Gareth Bale made when Real Madrid paid that substantial amount of money, world record amount of money for him. I think with Pogba, he does get a lot of unnecessary and unfair criticism. What colour his hair is does not matter a lick, you know. You know, whether he plays basketball, doesn't really matter. If he goes to a nightclub, if he's doing it on the pitch, that's where he's judged. And I don't think he would have got to the position he did, leading Juventus to a title, to a Champions League final, if the off-the-field distractions were a problem for him. What he does need to do, you're right, is grab a showpiece occasion by the neck, by the throat, as, you know, other big players have done. He's only scored 6 goals so far this season. Although, to be fair, on a couple of occasions, they have been key goals, to be fair to him. But I hope he does take the opportunity to write the headlines at the weekend and prove a few people wrong who have been determined to write him off.
Yeah, I like Pogba as a player. I think he's supremely gifted. But I think that Manchester United should cut and run on him. I think it's not a match made in heaven. I don't believe he really suits the Jose Mourinho team. I don't think he's the manager for Pogba. And I don't think Pogba is the player for Jose Mourinho. He's a great manager. He's a great individual player.
Great social media stats, though.
Yeah, I know. But I just don't know if it's in his makeup to be the player, the type of industrious box-to-box player that Jose wants.
Isn't that an indictment of the club, of maybe Mourinho's tactics? Because he's a wonderful footballer, a marauding, as you say, midfielder, who, if he were played the way he wants to play by another manager, would thrill us all. And I think at Manchester United, it did seem to be a good fit. They did look as though they would dovetail nicely, precisely because of the kind of player that he is and the kind of player that we've been used to seeing Manchester United play in the past. Yeah. So I'd be really disappointed if they were to cut and run and not try to play in a way that gets the best out of him.
For Pogba himself, I just feel he's not going to struggle. There'll be clubs, big clubs that want him. Teams out there in Europe, whether it's in England or elsewhere, that I think will help him develop as a player, redevelop as a player, because let's face it, he was the world's most expensive player. He was the next big thing, and he's gone backwards. If you're talking about the world's best central midfielders right now, Pogba doesn't make the top five, does he?
Yeah, but this
that's
is
because
my point.
He's at United.
If you when Real Madrid bought Gareth Bale, they played him in a way that got the best out of him. When Juventus when Napoli bought Higuain, they played him in a way that got the best out of him. You know, when you spend that much money on a footballer, you play them in a way that gets the best out of him. And yet, it's quite bizarre to think that United would have such a massive outlay on a player that helps them off the pitch. In a manner that would get the best out of him.
But that's what happens when the team is subjugated almost to the manager's ego. Mm. And if you look at what's happening now, we're already being fed the lines, huge changes in the summer, talk about six players. Mourinho wants a right-back, a left-back, a centre-back, two central midfield players, and a winger.
And
a cake with a cherry on it.
The squad is threadbare, isn't it?
Yeah. Just, you
know, on that point that you just made, building the team around such a talented player, agree. But look, they've bought someone arguably bigger in Alexis Sanchez since. They're giving Alexis Sanchez more wages. So what do they do? Do they build around Sanchez now, or do they build around Pogba, or do you build around Lukaku, who's the primary centre forward? Mm. It's hard to do when you've got more than one marquee player, isn't it? I think a part of the ways would actually suit both parties.
So you say it's hard to do, and I keep going back to Real Madrid, and forgive me for doing that, but Zidane, a virtual rookie compared to Mourinho, but he does have big players. He does have stellar talents. He does find a way to win. You know, he is back in the Champions League final again. They do play good football. There is a way of doing that. You know, listen, Mourinho, there's everybody knows how massive a manager Mourinho is in the game of football. So you can't criticise him as such. All I'm saying is that it's a big disappointment to see a player with the talent that Pogba has not being released to play in the manner that earned him the move in the first place.
What about Rashford then?
Yeah.
You know, he seems to have regressed.
Yeah.
You know, Martial's been marginalised.
Yeah.
That's not good for certainly not good for the England
team.
It's
not good for England, no. Has Marcus Rashford regressed? I guess he has, but that's only because he's not had enough starts. He's not played in the position.
That's my point.
That is his best. I mean, he's a centre forward. He burst onto the scene as a striker and he scored a hatful of goals, but he's not really playing there anymore. Left side, he can do a job there, but I don't think he's as effective there. I think he gave him a run as a centre forward and he would score goals. It's a tough one with Rashford because the easy thing to say now, based on the fact that Jose isn't using him in the way that we hope, is to say leave. But do I think it's in his best interest to leave? I'm not sure. I think he should give it another season to try and prove himself, try and win Jose Mourinho over. But it's too easy to say, oh, look, it's not working out with this guy. I'm not playing every week. I'll leave. You know, squad players can be important. You can come off the bench and be a real key man. I know you wouldn't want to do that. Go on, what are you shaking your head
for?
Well,
no, because I just don't buy it. I think if Rashford looks around the Premier League now and he sees other young players, Sterling, Ali, Kane, who have come on a bundle for playing regular first-team football over the past few seasons, and he says, you know, to himself, I'm at a massive club, yes, I've made appearances, yes, but that's all they are, appearances. How many games has he
started? Hasn't he got to just do a little bit better? Because No, I think so. Because in that team, in that squad, you've got Lukaku. OK, he's nailed on. He didn't call him untouchable, but we know he's going to pick him.
And
they
need him fit.
We know that he's
going to
pick Alexis Sanchez. There is one other spot up for grabs if a three-pronged attack. And Rashford, I don't think, has been outstanding enough to earn that spot on a regular basis, but he's got a great chance to do it. The ball is in his court, a little bit like it was with Sterling at the start of the season. They just signed Bernardo Silva, and there's a lot of competition. He stepped it up. I think it's down to Rashford to step it up. I think leaving now would be conceding defeat too early.
If we're talking about resilience, let's talk about Ashley Young, and let's also talk about Jesse Lingard. Now, Lingard has been one of those ones you think, oh, he's a bit of a peripheral player. But actually, this season, he's come in and been almost pivotal.
Absolutely. 13 goals so far this season he's scored. He's only scored one in his last 14, two in his last 19. But the goals he has scored have been, on many occasions, big goals. Goals against Chelsea, goals against Arsenal, goals that have turned matches. He's proven himself to be a big game player. And he has shown a resilience because, in his case, it wasn't so much Mourinho, more a lot of United fans and neutral fans who couldn't really see the point of Jesse Lingard. Mm. And he's won them all over. He's done superbly for club as well as for country. And so, when you talk about resilience, both he and Ashley Young have done superbly to win a very demanding fan base over. I think their situation is different to Rashford because I think Rashford is at a stage he has to play. I think that Rashford has nothing really to prove to us. He's scored goals on a consistent basis, scored goals in big games, scored on his debut in so many different competitions, and he's proven that that initial burst onto the scene that he had wasn't a flash in the pan. And I think when you've done that, your next step is to play regular first-team football rather than just cameo appearances or being a squad man. That's why Martial wants to go, because I think he'll go somewhere else and he'll... Listen, why has Salah exploded into goals this season? Because he backed himself, he left, he went to Fiorentina, he went to Roma, now he's back at Chelsea, and he said himself, I wanted to prove Mourinho wrong. And I think that cycle of I think he left when he was around about 2021. You know, look at De Bruyne. You know, why has De Bruyne done so well? Because he left. He said, I'm going to back myself. I can't get into the Chelsea team. Mourinho was there at the time. I'm going to back myself. And that's exactly what he did. I think Rashford could do the same.
I think Martial would do that. I think Martial would leave. But I just think it's given up too soon. I think Lingard, I know that you're making a slightly different point, but I would say that he just should look at Lingard and say, look, you know, it is worth sticking with. You can get yourself in there eventually. I think it's down to Rashford.
Let's look at Chelsea. Antonio Conte has said they've got no chance if they play as badly as they did at Newcastle on Sunday, which to me seems a statement of the obvious.
Yes.
Again, we've talked about Manchester United in the context of their manager. We've still got to do the same thing about Chelsea because it's all about Conte and essentially his plan to get out of the club.
I think Conte, his body language, his sort of demeanour since day one this season has been defeatist and that has rubbed off on the players. Chelsea, when they can be bothered, the players, when they want to put in a performance, are every bit as good as Manchester United, possibly better as a team. But they have these no-shows every now and again. One of them was against Newcastle United. They didn't try a leg. They will try in the cup final. We won't see a repeat performance. It'll be a far, far closer match. The likes of Hazard will be up for it. And I expect them to produce a decent final. But for Conte, I put their failure this season, I lay it at his door. I know he had reasons for feeling upset, not being backed, but he had to get over it and just bring the energy that he brought to the side en route to winning the title. He was the opposite of that this year, and that's why the Chelsea players, I think they've lost respect for him.
He is interesting. He reminds me of the coach who tells his players to do well in the cup final so they can get some better players next year. And he's, so often he's been talking very publicly about the fact that he's got the most he can out of the group of players that he's got. And I was at Chelsea last week.
Do you believe that? I don't believe that.
No, I don't.
He won the title with a squad that was
absolutely. I think he has made mistakes. I think the way that the whole Diego Costa thing was handled very badly. And I think as far as he's concerned, you're right, it may well be. It's difficult for us as journalists because obviously we like people to speak, people in football. We like them to be honest. And he has been very honest. Just looking back at the season as a whole, I remember at Norwich when all of our jaws dropped when he tore into Mourinho and it was really, really spiteful and went right for the throat in his criticisms of him. But in terms of the players, I just think that all too often he's complained about them not being good enough or not having enough quality. And eventually, you being a player, you can say it better than me, but I think eventually it starts to take effect within the squad and within the team.
Yeah, for players, they know if they're playing well or not, so they don't always need that. But I think it's one of those, when they play poorly and the manager says, my players have been poor, fine, yeah. Absolutely. But when you've had good games and then it's still the same response. Still, yeah, we need more. It's not good enough. It's like, well, what more do I need to do? And then you just start to think, well, you're not actually judging this fairly now. You're just saying this for political reasons. You're just saying it to get more money to bring in replacements for me. So those guys, I'm not surprised they're a little bit disenchanted.
The only thing I do think is that maybe Chelsea as a club need a gear change because they've been a bit, I think, complacency has set in. A little bit at Chelsea. When they've had that bad season that follows a good one, they've always been able to bounce back. But if you look at the top six as a whole, it will be tougher than ever to do it because Arsenal will throw money at it this summer. Spurs are now going to build from a position of strength. Pochettino has gone for it. Liverpool, already they've got Keita coming in. They're looking at Nabil Fekir. Okay, they haven't already signed him. They keep telling us, but they're clearly interested in him. And the two Manchester clubs are going to go stronger as well. So the idea that Chelsea can just walk back into the top four, excuse me, that's not going to happen this time around.
Do you think defeat will trigger a change, not just in personnel, but in philosophy? Because, you know, yet again, their youth teams have hoovered up everything. There are players there of real potential. You had Ruben Loftus-Cheek going to Crystal Palace to prove how good he was. Yeah. You know, you talk to people at Chelsea, they said he was probably the best player in training before he was shunted out on loan. On your point, do you need that club to actually look at itself and say, we've got to change?
I would like them to change. I think a lot of Chelsea fans might like them to change and to bring in some of these kids because their academy is the best in the country. It has been for many years. I think the fact that Abramovich is not spending the crazy money that he used to is a sign that they'll have to look towards youth, whoever the new manager is, if Conte leaves. From what I've seen, Ethan Ampadu is ready to be part of that back three. He looks special to me. Hudson-Odoi, very impressed by him. He's rapid, and I think that he can take over the role of Pedro potentially next season. And Loftus-Cheek, I think, gets into the Chelsea side. I really do.
He gets into the England side.
But especially if Conte or whoever Chelsea's new manager, if they play a midfield five. With three central midfielders, two of which attack-minded. Loftus-Cheek has got to be nailed on for one of those spots. So I think those three kids deserve their shot. And I hope that Chelsea will revert to youth.
And I hope that fans don't see it as a negative. You know, every time people say rely on their youth, people see that as the second best option. You know, whereas if you bought some players of a similar age from Brazil, or Spain, everyone says, oh, we're really ambitious, we're showing our ambition. They spend millions developing these players. Jody Morris has done a terrific job, hoovering up, as you say, with the younger players. And yet, they just keep farming these players out.
It's not, you know, City are doing the same thing. You know, City today have just sold Pablo Maffeo to Stuttgart for about €10 million. That's basically a down payment on what it's cost their academy to produce him. So we know the business model works, but I think that where Chelsea are, they almost need a philosophical reboot.
I agree completely. And one aspect we don't consider often enough is the supporters. They had John Terry for all those years as the local boy. The Chelsea were one of our own, came through the ranks. Lampard, okay, they bought him, but they bought him as a young player, and he was someone they could identify with. It was as if he'd come through. I think Chelsea need a bit of that now. They need the youngsters to come through.
But the problem for Chelsea, though, is that to do that, you have to have someone who's in charge who has some stability for a longer period of time. You can't have someone who's in charge And then as soon as they have a bad season, he goes, someone else comes in. Mm. That person comes in and says, if you want to achieve, you've got to spend money.
Because at the moment...
Back to where you started.
At the moment, they haven't got a director of football. Mm. You know, they're obviously missing Michael Emanalo, or according to Conte, they are, certainly. If Conte goes, well, OK, we're into the name game again. Sarri from Naples has been mentioned in dispatches. So there's so much uncertainty.
Yeah.
And it almost overshadows the opportunity they've actually got in the FA Cup final to actually salvage something.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, look, I going back to the youth, I just think it will reinvigorate the place. It really will. And I've played for homegrown products lift if they're good. And these three guys in particular are very good. And they're not the only ones. They lift the crowd. Yeah, the atmosphere gets raised. Yeah. And the fan base really can get behind the team and identify with them a little bit more. I think, as you rightly point out, it shouldn't be seen as a second best option. I think it's an opportunity for Chelsea to reinvent themselves because they've got a lot of talent there. They won the Youth Cup final. Oh, and such style.
I think what you're spot on. Chelsea need players with a commitment to the club.
Yes.
It has to mean something to those players. There are too many players. It doesn't matter. If they don't finish in the top four, Hazard can say everything he wants. He, if the right offer comes in from Real Madrid, say, Zidane, come and play for me. He's gone. Mm. Courtois runs down his contract. He's gone. If Chelsea find themselves in trouble, those players don't have a commitment to the club, regardless of what they say. Whereas if you've come through that system, it means something to you. Mm. I remember covering Spurs when Soldado was struggling, Adebayor, it was very hit and miss. Obviously, things weren't happening behind the scenes. And Kane came through. And every game that Kane played, it meant something to him and it meant something to the fans. And that's obviously where the chant, one of our own, really started to take effect. And, you know, I think with Chelsea, that gear change surely should comprise having some of those young players come through and represent the club.
Mm. Other big event of the week, Gareth Southgate naming his World Cup squad on Wednesday. He sort of let it be known that there aren't going to be too many surprises. Do we take that as read, or are we going to see some uncapped players, maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold or a Ryan Sessegnon involved?
Probably not. I don't think Sessegnon. I think it might come too soon for him. And obviously, he's only played in the Championship. He looks a special player, though. I really like the look of Sessegnon. I wouldn't pick him. No, I think it would be too soon. Trent Alexander-Arnold, I would pick, because I think he's just been outstanding. And in big games, he hasn't been brilliant in every game.
Well, he's 19.
Yeah, exactly. He had a testing experience in Rome, I remember. But he is, in my opinion, probably better than Kieran Trippier. And that seems incredibly harsh on Trippier. I can see your eyebrows raising.
Sorry, I'm glad you said that.
For me, Kyle Walker is the best right-back.
Yeah.
You think they'll play him in a three?
Maybe, and I understand the logic of it, but I think you're losing Kyle's best qualities, which are down the wing. So I would play him as a right-wing-back. And I would have Alexander-Arnold as the understudy because I actually think Alexander-Arnold in a year's time will be maybe level pegging with Kyle Walker in the stakes. So, hand on heart, I think it'll be Trippier and Walker.
I would take Alexander-Arnold. I totally agree. I think he's improved as a player through the season. There's one particular game, Crystal Palace, where he was having a hard time against Zaha, and in the second half he came out and played much further forward and put the pressure.
Yeah, remember that was at the game.
And it showed in a game how, you know, he can deal with a difficult situation and the kind of adversity that obviously you'll get at a World Cup against top players. But not only that, if you look at the calibre of the opposition he's come up against and come through in this Champions League run to the final, how could you not pick him in a World Cup?
He looked after Sane very, very well.
Absolutely.
I think it's also, you know, to your point about homegrown players, what struck me about him is how naturally he comes across. You know, he's obviously a local lad. He does charitable work around there. But it was really interesting on Sunday when they did the Lap of Honour.
Right.
He went and took a lad in a wheelchair around with him. Little things like that mean an awful lot. And, you know, you can say that's a part of the sort of ethos of Liverpool, but that says a lot about the bloke himself.
It does, yeah. He's clearly got a great character. He's got wonderful temperament because at his age, I was happy if I was got a reserve game. Like, this is a talented boy. You know, I played for the England youth teams. It's hard. to make the step up to... It's not that hard. It's hard, but it's not impossible to get first-team appearances, the odd one. Mm. But to be good enough to stay in the team above others and to then, when you hit that little plateau, which is natural for all young players, to then come through and improve again, that it takes a special character to do that, real mental strength as well as talent. So Alexander-Arnold is... He's special, and I think Liverpool have unearthed a gem there.
I think I would take Alexander-Arnold and I would take Sessegnon, actually, because, yeah, again, you know, I think the Brazilians, they get a talented young player through, the special player, they take them, you know, and we get excited about seeing them. You know, the Spanish would do it as well. Why should we not do it? And I think when we're talking about what Southgate would do, let's bear in mind, earlier in the season, ahead of the games against Brazil and Germany, he really gambled and said to some very experienced players, you're not part of my plans anymore. Mm. And everyone thought, well, hang on a minute, you're doing this ahead of Brazil and Germany. We might have to watch this for our fingers, you know. But he played young teams in both those games and we came out with a lot of credit. I don't think he's worried about picking young players.
It's been brave.
Well, I think so. And also, I think his focus, actually, to be honest, is not 2018, I think it's 2022.
It might be. Yeah, but... He doesn't know he'll be there in 2022. We don't know. No one can be certain of it. It's results business, isn't it? Mm. We finish bottom of the group.
I don't think we'll finish.
No, nor do I. But I don't think Southgate can afford to just think about 2022.
I think if you look around the team, and in tournaments gone by, there was only one player, and if he was injured, we'd get the prayer mat out and all that nonsense. But we have goals all over the team. We have pace all over the team. We've got creativity. I am not... There'll probably be people listening to this saying, oh, what are you talking about? Why players aren't world-class? There are some real cliché myths floating around. If you can get a team to operate well, buy into an ethos, work within an effective team structure. We've seen up and down the Premier League this season. If you can do that, you can get results, and I think England can do that.
Would you play Kane and Vardy together?
I would, yes. I think they'd be incredibly harsh on Raheem Sterling because he's had a sensational season. So Kane and Sterling, or Kane and Vardy for me, I think attack is absolutely the best form of defence for England at the World Cup finals. We want to be playing in the other team's half. We want to be exploiting that pace.
Would you play Kane and Vardy together, Sterling on the left and Lingard on the right?
No. Then you're dropping Dele Alli.
So?
Yeah. But I wouldn't drop Dele Alli.
Why?
Because I think he's a goal-scoring midfielder.
He's also an occasion player.
A little bit special.
Dropped him in the last game.
Yeah. Dele Alli would make it for me. I would be looking... I think we'll go with three at the back. 3-4-1-2. That's how I'm looking at it. Or 3-5-2. I think I would play Alli as part of a midfield three. With two up top, whether that's Vardy and Kane or Sterling and Kane, it's all about the pace attack. It really is.
I would play Lingard and Sterling as wide players. I'd play a two up top. Mm. I'd play Dyer with a creative midfielder, whether it was Loftus-Cheek or Alli. But I wouldn't be afraid. Again, if you look at other big nations with big aspirations, they're not afraid to leave players on the bench. Whereas in England,
have you seen the defence that we will not be protecting?
But hang on a minute. We're playing Tunisia and we're playing Panama.
They're different cases.
Yeah, but what we want to do straight away is get out of the group and also get some momentum as well. We want to get a good feeling about the team. And I think if we do that, if we utilise the pace in the team, obviously, as you say, Vardy and Kane together, different styles. Vardy with his pace and his ability to get in behind and Kane with his
power. The only issue there is that neither is used to having a partner. Kane loves playing on his own up top, so does Vardy. So that, I think, would need a bit of work. Whereas Sterling is very good in and around a front player. So that might give him the edge. I believe that Sterling will start the first game just floating in and around Kane.
I'd be disappointed if we didn't. We talk so much about it. You know, oh, they're brilliant, they should do this. And then we get to major tournaments and we're scared. We panic. We're worried about what they might do. Let the opposition worry.
And they're
about
also worried what we in the media might say.
Which
in the past has probably been justified. But that's where I would think that Southgate's influence will be most marked because he's been over the last year, he's been doing everything he can to create a climate of self-confidence and tolerance.
He's nailing it. I think he's nailing the job at the moment. It's not much that I'm disagreeing with in terms of his selections. Okay, one or two of his squad selections I wasn't convinced about. But in terms of, you know, having a plan A and a plan B, back three, back four, he's not been afraid to try it. He's dropped some big names, some older guys. I love the idea of naming the squad this early.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think all the players will actually appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you'll have a good standby list. So, you know, don't go off on holiday. There's a chance we'll need you. But the players know where they stand. And that's because he's been there not that long ago, Gareth Southgate, as a player. He knows the experience.
Yeah, Darren, sorry, just for purposes of the viewers and the listeners, give them a glimpse behind the scenes as it is. When we go up to St George's Park, and, you know, there is the access to the players. Mm. Now, when I've been there, I've seen or felt a different sense, a different mood. What actually happens in that? And what's your view of the way players now are responding to the attention they're obviously going to get?
Well, when you go to St George's Park to interview players, the way it works is that there is a main press conference that everyone sees on our friends on the rolling news channels. And then afterwards, we have scheduled times where we will sit in different rooms with a player, and representatives of every publication and the electronic media will sit around a big table, bigger than this, and the player will come in and they'll speak for around about 15 to 20 minutes. I remember Adam Lallana speaking superbly about Liverpool, about himself, about his relationship with Gareth Southgate as well, and about his own aspirations. And then he'll finish, another one will come in, we'll do him, and then we save maybe one interview for one day and another for the following day. So if the media day, for example, is on a Wednesday, then we would run one piece in the Thursday for Friday newspaper and the second in the Friday for Saturday.
What I'm trying to get at is more mature and there's a better feel about the place, which
yes.
can only be translated positively on the pitch, I think.
What England have done, and you're right about Southgate nailing the whole operation, under Southgate's watch, they've stripped away all the nonsense, all the pomp and the ceremony, all the treating the players like rock stars.
Okay, good.
There are good press officers. You know, guys like Andy Walker and Greg Dimitru and all those guys who understand the needs of the media and understand the needs of the players as well, the requirements.
So it's not them against us anymore.
There's no more paranoia, basically.
No, and that's great. And you want your players to be relaxed and you want them to be able to speak relatively freely. You know, they're going to have, you know, they're not going to be silly or gung-ho about what they say. But no, I think in the past it's felt as if the players have had a real wall up and a bit of paranoia, like you're saying. It doesn't help. I think you want the England players to enjoy the whole experience, don't you? Especially at a tournament. And in recent times, they definitely haven't enjoyed it.
I was at South Africa and I was based in Cape Town. And you saw the Dutch come out and mingle with the fans and whatever else. And you saw other nations, you know, come out, go out, walk around. And the English, you know, it was almost like Colditz, you know. And, you know, we forget this is football we're talking about. This isn't the United Nations.
You watch, lose the first game 1-0 and the headlines...
No, I think the headlines
will go against them.
I think the media now understand that you're talking about young players. You're talking about a group of players with the potential to do big things. Yes, everyone will have an opinion on the way we play and whether we play well or not. But there isn't this collective will at all within the media to batter England, as people might think.
But if we are talking about paranoia, that will be in about probably 6 to 8 clubs this week. Mm. There are going to be big changes managerially, aren't there?
I've never seen an end of a season where so many managers have so much uncertainty around their jobs. Some, obviously, like Wagner, got a year left. Benitez got a year left, you know, considering their options. Others, the fans don't want them. Allardyce at Everton, Moyes at West Ham. And I think over the next few days, there will be a bit of a bloodletting. And I think, as well as players leaving their clubs, I think a lot of managers will leave their clubs. I think it's a good thing, I have to say. Mm. I think English football needs younger men, fresh ideas, a different approach in terms of appointing managers, because I think all too often we recycle the same old managers. They're good at what they do, don't get me wrong, but I think we need the younger men to come in and maybe fresher voices. You know, Arteta there talking about potentially at Arsenal. You know more about that than me, but that would, for me, would possibly be a step too far.
Yeah, I agree.
But I certainly think that we need to have a fresh...
But it looks like Arsenal are going to do that, doesn't it? They're going to go young by the look of it.
Not necessarily. No, I don't think any of us know. If truth be told, we're led to believe that Allegri is probably top of the list, but will they be able to get him? I'm surprised that Arteta and Vieira are so high on the rumoured shortlist because, you know, we've got one rookie in Patrick Vieira and one guy in Arteta who's never managed. So for me, that they can't manage Arsenal next. They should come after this guy.
I slightly disagree with you on Vieira because I think Vieira has obviously been part of the Manchester City setup, but he's gone away to New York City. Mm. Yeah, he's taken over from Jason Kreese. The team were around about 17th in the league when he took over. He's offloaded players. He's brought new players in. Mm. He's brought them up higher up the table. He's had experience of man management, tactics, picking a team. He's been in the dugout. People might deride the MLS, you know, but remember, Wenger came from Grand Passaic. So when you think about Vieira, I think he's a different case to Arteta, who basically is going to get the job because
I wouldn't disagree at all with that. But look, Arsenal, in my opinion, they need a real strong disciplinarian. They need someone that will knock the bad habits out of the players, knock them into shape. And for me, Allegri is the standout one. He ticks a lot of the boxes. And this sounds stupid as well. Arsenal got a tradition of appointing smart, quite respectable managers as well. And I think he's got the
gravitas.
Right, gravitas for the job.
Vieira would have gravitas.
I agree on Vieira, and I'm not writing him off. Yeah. But if you were to compare them as if they were players, yeah. Allegri and Vieira.
Yeah.
I mean, Allegri is an elite player. Vieira is a potential
Wasn't
Vieira
player. Part of the unbeaten season?
No, I'm talking about these are two managers, but if you were judging them as players...
So I said unbeaten season, part of their
double. You see what I'm saying, yeah.
So, what about Nagelsmann? I look at what he's doing at Hoffenheim, 30 years old.
Future star, yeah. I mean, he's a current star. He's not a future star. I think if you've got it, you've got it. And clearly he knows exactly what he's doing. The success he's had is amazing. Tactically so bright and brave. But again, I think it would represent a slight gamble because it's a new country and it's a bigger club, much bigger club, and the scrutiny is huge. That's why, again, Allegri, Vieira even, because he's experienced that giant club.
Can I
ask
a question? If Arteta goes in, he's 36. Mm. If someone that young goes in, does he spend the first 6 months with all the players testing him to see how far they can push him?
The players would test the manager no matter who they are, I think, because every dressing room I've ever been in, you just watch the manager, especially a new manager, you watch them like a hawk, you listen to every word they say, every response to every situation, and you suss them out. And it doesn't take players long to realise he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Or not sure about him, you know, not sure about him. And when you've got 2, 3, 4, 5 players saying, I'm not sure he's up to it, then you've got a problem. And I think that's more likely to happen with Arteta, because of his inexperience. I think sometimes you maybe need to make those mistakes somewhere else.
I can remember Mark Hughes, who may or may not stay at Southampton after keeping him up, telling me that actually, he said, probably, no matter what you've done in your playing career, you've probably got about 10 minutes. The moment you walk into that dressing room, you've got 25 pairs of eyes focused on you. So it's going to be interesting.
You've really got to watch what you say if you're a manager. Footballers are sharp. OK, they don't always come across that way in interviews and one of the most academic people in the world. But when it comes to sussing out people and their knowledge of football or the way they go about things, they are on the case, let me tell you. So yeah, I would like to see someone with more gravitas come in, someone who maybe commands a touch more respect because of that. And because actually, I want a manager to suss out the players at Arsenal and I want him to go in there and evaluate them and to say, are you the one for me? Are you prepared to learn? Are you prepared to improve? And I think he will find out quickly which are the players to keep and which are the ones to shed. So
it's been a bit too cosy, isn't it?
It has. And look, I'm an Arsene Wenger fan. He's been brilliant, but they've had it quite easy, the players in that dressing room. And I believe a strict disciplinarian is an absolute must for the next Arsenal manager.
Yeah. What about, you know, obviously fans are having a greater say in terms of, you know, they're certainly much more vocal these days. They're not having Sam Allardyce at any price at Everton, are they? Will that lead to the inevitable departure?
I think he's leaving. I think that... But frankly, I think the people who run the club have been a bit cowardly about it because if they don't want him, they've just got to say so. all this talk about surveys and whatever else.
Oh, it's a nonsense.
Yeah, it's nonsense. You know, and it's no way to treat an experienced manager as well. I think as far as the Rooney situation is concerned as well, we now hear that, you know, they're trying to get him to stay when Allardyce quite clearly doesn't see him as part of his plans going forward, certainly in the first team. So it's looking for all the world as though Allardyce is on his way, and that's a real shame. But, you know, Everton, if they do get rid of him, they are another club. This next appointment for them is key. Get it right and they could push back towards the top four. And let's not kid ourselves, when they spent all that money last summer, that was with an aim to break into the top four. Somebody with other than Mascheri needs to make the decision, because I think he's a bit starstruck to use the words Hollywood manager last summer when he was talking about Koeman and you know, the guy that he'd brought in, you know, and he needs to realise it's just got to be the right man for the job. That's going to inspire the players and do well. But yeah, I definitely think Allardyce is
leaving. The issue they've both had with Allardyce and Moyes at West Ham, who may be on his way as well, is that I think the fans will respect the fact that they've kept them up and they've made them safe. Okay, great. But it's just boring. And they want to see teams. They don't want to pay their season ticket and turn up for 6-7 of the home matches. How many are there in total? 19. 6-7-8 of the game. I want to see them playing for a draw at home, playing to keep a clean sheet at home. They don't want that. They're Everton and West Ham. I think they can. They should expect and should have the right to see their team try and win.
I must just say, though, if you look at some of the teams that have been in relegation trouble, they were there precisely because the fans demanded that they open up. Crystal Palace brought in De Boer. They wanted sexier football. Stoke got rid of Pulis because the fans said, don't tell us to be careful what we wish for. We have a right, having paid our season ticket money, to expect better football. West Brom got rid of
But I think Everton and West Ham have got the resources and they're the stature of club that they can attract good enough players to play attacking football.
What Everton do as well, but they bought badly. And so when you buy badly, you have a team that can't defend.
That's the problem.
You need somebody to go in there and just get them playing in a way that gets the points.
In both cases,
maybe next season they can play better.
It was recruitment that was the issue.
Yeah.
And it forced them to go with really defensive managers to save this.
And recruitment, I suspect, will be the ultimate decisive factor at Tottenham,
yes,
where you've got Pochettino essentially calling out Daniel Levy, saying, we've got to sort this out. What do you expect to happen?
I think Levy will meet him halfway. I really do. I don't see how you could not, when you look at what he's delivered. Champions League football, 3 seasons in a row, first time in the Premier League era he's done that. He's obviously taken Harry Kane on to a new level. He's helped them to finish as the top club, in London. He has changed the mentality at the club. Everyone thought that Spurs would fold as they heard the galloping hooves of Chelsea coming up on the rails last week, and yet it was Chelsea who choked and not Spurs. I think he has done so much for that club that Levy would be a fool not to listen to what he's got to say. And let's not kid ourselves. What he wants is maybe for the club to relax the wage structure, bring in a couple of big players this summer, because Llorente's been a flop. A couple of the others have been very, very disappointing as well. They do not have the squad to compete. And if they want to stay in that top four, if they want to compete for the title in their new stadium, they've got to spend big.
And can we just look, you know, time is running away with us, but can we look at City? Because we have to. I'll just give you a little insight into some of the records that they've set. Most consecutive wins, 18. Most goals, 105. Most passes, 904 in a single game. Most wins, 32. Most away wins, 16. Most points, 100. Biggest goal difference, plus 79. Biggest points gap, 19. By any standards, that is historic.
It is completely historic, and this team will go down in, you know, in the Hall of Fame, because they are the real deal. Those numbers you just read out outline it, don't they? They're a very, very special team. But what have they been up against? That is the question. What have they been up against? The others have been a disappointment, haven't they? Let's be honest. So I'd like to see a bit more fight, a bit more quality.
Not as good as the Invincibles.
Oh, I think it's a really hard one. I think the Invincibles were maybe a better team, but the City team are better to watch.
Yeah,
they're just wonderful. But they didn't win the Champions League. This was a wonderful chance for them to win the Champions League. They should be in the Champions League final. If they were in the Champions League final, they'd be overwhelming favourites. So, despite all that, it's a season of one massive, colossal missed opportunity.
See, I more inclined to focus on what they have done. Mm. And what they have done is change the bar game, raise the bar. Because now it's not just enough to spend big and win. He has shown Guardiola that you have to spend big. You can spend big and win playing outstanding football. And I think for that, they deserve huge credit. Yeah. And any number of players in that team you could take out as being beacons for the club. But of course, De Bruyne has been absolutely sensational. So yeah, well done to them. And I think next season will be even better because the other clubs will try and catch them.
OK. We're going to have hopefully a special show with questions from the listeners and viewers in a week or so. I'll just pick out a couple. Akil Nair, what's the criteria for determining a good season for a club or a manager? Silverware or league positions? What do you think?
Oh, well, I think silverware is the gauge, in my opinion, but I'm a bit old school.
That's a Tottenham question.
Yeah, for Spurs, they should have won the FA Cup. They should have been in the FA Cup final, really. But it's a tough semi-final and you know, they didn't get on the right side of it. Silverware for the big giants, for sure, is the gauge. But generally, not everyone can win silverware, unfortunately. So look, the league position is the ultimate test, isn't it? And Arsenal have been the sixth best team by some margin. No complaints.
You see, I disagree. I think, as far as Pochettino is concerned, finishing in the top four enables them to play Champions League football and attract A-list players. Winning the FA Cup does not do that. We can kid ourselves that it does. We can talk in romantic terms about the FA Cup, but the fact is, if they get into the top four, they take Champions League football to their new stadium next season. It's an easier sell to better players.
It's a harder sell to prospective players if you've never won anything in decades. It's harder to attract them because they want two things. They want good salary and they want to be able to win silverware.
I interviewed William 3 weeks ago, and he said to me, "I would rather play in the Champions League than win the FA Cup." And he said, I asked him why, and he said, "Because elite players want to play in the elite competition. We don't want to play in the Europa League. We want to play in the top club competition."
You only say that if you don't win it. You say that when you don't win it because it's...
Yeah, but he's won more than his fair share.
No, I know, but it's a get out of jail, isn't it? It's like, I'd rather... I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I think that, yes, elite players want to play in the Champions League, but you've got to be in it to win it. Got to be in it to win it. And I don't think one has to be mutually exclusive from the other either.
Mm. The athlete... Yeah, obviously a kindred spirit.
Not these days.
Yeah. Do you think clubs will try to emulate Pep and Klopp's style or look for ways to stop them?
Well, it'd be silly not to look for ways to stop them, won't they? That's part of the challenge for everybody next season, isn't it? How can we stop Manchester City and Liverpool's juggernaut going forward? So, no, I think every manager has a responsibility this summer to think about ways of controlling them. Will they try and copy them? No. Mate, you can only work with what you got. And unfortunately, most managers in the Premier League have limited options and they will tailor their style of play, their philosophy, around the quality of the players they've got at their disposal. Unfortunately, Huddersfield, it's really a bad example, but Southampton, they don't want better to play like Liverpool. You can't do it.
So you're going to hit me over the head for saying it, but I disagree.
All right. That's what it's all about.
I think if you look at City's two defeats this season, two big defeats, who are they against?
Huddersfield.
Yeah.
And Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And what did both those clubs do? They went out and attacked them. They went for it. They showed bravery. They showed that you know, if you try and shut up shop and park the bus against City and the big teams, all that's going to happen is they will find a way to break you down, particularly City. They will find a way to get through. Whereas if you attack them and you try to find weaknesses in their armoury, eventually...
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I was thinking along different lines in terms of changing their own style of play to be attack-minded every single week. I just don't see that happening. I wish it'd be fantastic to watch, wouldn't it? Mm. I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
Final question then. Back to the FA Cup final. Prediction, please.
Go on, Darren.
I think
a tight call, isn't it?
It is a tight call, but I think United, if they look at the way that Chelsea played yesterday, will see a team that are wounded and can kill them off. And I think they've got the armoury to do that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But Chelsea is such a flaky team. When they want to turn it on, they can. I think this might be an upset. I think we might see a sad Jose Mourinho at the end of the day. And remember, Olivier Giroud loves a cup final. Yeah. He loves it. Sure. He has to play. Yeah. And I think Hazard and Giroud might just be the stars of the show. And I'm going to go for a narrow Chelsea win.
Interesting. The problem is Chelsea are their own worst enemies. I reckon a relatively comfortable 2-0 win for United. Jose will love it. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.